And what's up, podcast people and soundtrack geniuses around the world? You're listening to The Soundcast, the official podcast of TrackSounds.com. And on this podcast, we talk all things film, television, and video game music. I am Christopher Coleman, and joining me on this very day is...
Kristen Romanelli of Film Score Monthly Online.
And I'm the cheeseburger-loving Dane Walker, composer, in parentheses.
That was a spoiler.
No, it's not. It has nothing to do with anything. Alan Silvestri posted a picture of him and his wife eating cheeseburgers. It's not a spoiler. I'm a cheeseburger-loving Dane Walker, composer in parentheses.
We are already spiraling. Today is Monday, April 29th, 2019, and in this episode, we discuss the original score to Avengers Endgame by Alan Silvestri.
You can find all your cheeseburgers of the Soundcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Radio Public, or Google Podcasts. And you can send your feedback to soundcast@tracksounds.com. Leave us a voicemail on our SpeakPipe widget, or reach out to us on Twitter at AudioSoundcast. Welcome, Kristen. Welcome, Dane.
Hey.
Hi.
You're eating a cheeseburger.
That must be a good cheeseburger. Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you can talk about cheeseburgers or talk about Endgame with cheeseburgers. Can you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'd like to see you do it. That's our topic tonight. I think a few people have seen this film. We have all seen this film very recently. Mm-hmm. Dane on Saturday.
That's right.
I saw it on Sunday morning, and Kristen saw it on Sunday night. So it's all pretty fresh in our brains, except for those of us who also watched Game of Thrones episode 3 of season 8 afterwards, which was myself and Dane, who have double stuff to deal with right now.
Instead of watching Game of Thrones, I read Twitter.
It's a double cheeseburger.
Double cheeseburger.
I know what happens.
It's not quite as the same effect.
I don't know. Some people have already started putting up GIFs and stuff.
Yeah, still not the same. Not quite the same.
No.
I'll catch up.
Our topic for tonight is Avengers Endgame. I'll read you the summary quickly. Adrift in space with no food or water. And this is a very non-spoilery summary, to say the least. Tony Stark sends a message to Pepper Potts as his oxygen supply starts to dwindle. Meanwhile, the remaining Avengers, Thor, Black Widow, Captain America, and Bruce Banner must figure out a way to bring back their vanquished allies for an epic showdown with Thanos, the evil demigod who decimated the planet and the universe. Endgame released in China first on April 24th, 2019, and then in the U.S. and other countries on the 25th. Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 96% from the critics and 92% from the regular movie-going public.
What's up with you 8%ers?
8%ers?
That's 92% from the fans? Where's the other 8%?
Did you really think it would be 100% from the fans on anything ever?
Losing 8%ers.
Never. It'll never happen. From the fans, never. Box Office Mojo. This has some mojo. $357 million domestic, $1.22 billion worldwide in just the first weekend. Or I guess through today. Insane amount of money. The original score by Alan Silvestri, of course, was released by Hollywood Records digitally on Friday, April 26th. But the CD doesn't come out until May 24th. I don't know why, but that's how they do things. So let's dive into Endgame. It was a three-hour film. I think our review or our episode will be slightly shorter. Maybe not.
I really hope
a lot to talk about in this episode and about this film. So let's start off talking about our level of anticipation for this film. Dane, tell us about your anticipatory feelings for this film.
I was very excited. I was very nervous for who wasn't going to make it, who wasn't going to come back. And I was really nervous about the parts of the story that I couldn't figure out because they weren't showing anything in the trailers. And I speculated that most of the trailer was pretty much at the beginning of the movie. I was wrong. It's all at the end. No, I'm kidding. But the point is, I was very, very excited and also very nervous. I can't. Probably, I would say The Force Awakens that had the same kind of anticipation, right? Like, oh my gosh, I hope they don't screw this up, you know? And also, I hope it's awesome. And I hope, you know, all of those feelings. And this was that. This was like.
This is almost worse because it's like.
You knew.
You know, 10 years of anticipation. And if you don't stick this landing.
Right.
It's a catastrophe.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
Kristen, what was your level of anticipation for this film?
Oh, man. Oh, man. Well, ever since seeing Infinity War, I guess, and then the hints of what could be in Ant-Man and the Wasp when they start talking about in the first end credit scene.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when that happened, I was like, oh, this could be the how they do it. And mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we watched Infinity War on Friday night. It's on Netflix right now. And that just got me all hyped again.
You know, I think the beauty of Infinity War that made this movie so hyped was that they made the Avengers fallible.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
So then you were like, what's going to happen?
I mean, I hate to go.
These guys can't get it right all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I hate to go to a completely nerdy place, but this is a comic book movie. This was a TPK. Like, in.
Wait, what?
This.
It's a what?
A total party kill. So. No,
what kind of movie was it?
Comic book
movie. A comic book movie? Oh, I haven't heard that anywhere else before. How's that nerdy? I'm sorry.
You're derailing me.
I'm sorry.
No, but Infinity War is essentially a total party kill. And not total, but I mean, they're demoralized completely by the end. Like, essentially, you know, the Avengers.
Which made it great.
Yeah. Yeah. They lose. Your heroes lose big.
Yeah. Yes. So,
yeah.
That's what made it great. Mm. That's what made, and that's
so good.
For me, that's what raised my level of anticipation so much higher than I thought it was going to be for part two or for Endgame.
And they kill people you love. I mean, Black Panther, dust.
Yeah.
Cute little Peter Parker, dust. Like,
yeah.
Oh.
I mean, you kind of know that, okay, they're not probably really gone, but still, it was traumatic watching it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know, you know, my big question was, how are they going to resolve this problem? You know, it's a pretty good bet they're coming back, but how are they going to do it?
Yeah.
And so that's what, because I had a very specific interest in, I want to see them resolve this problem, which... I get your comparison to The Force Awakens. My anticipation for that was very different in that it's just like, oh, man, I can't wait to see more Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I have no idea what it's going to be about. I have no idea what they're going to do. I just can't wait to see it. This was very specific. Endgame was very specific to me. I can't wait to see how they resolve this problem.
Right.
This problem of all problems. Not just we got to rescue somebody. It's we have to restore 50% of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to do that? So I was really, really excited to see. And it happens to be the culmination of 21 previous films, 10 years of character development and all kinds of wonderful stuff. How is all that going to come together? And so, yeah, anticipation was really high. For this, and that fact that I couldn't see it on Thursday, which I traditionally do for any super big film was really gutting me because I just had to go dark and I just couldn't go on Twitter very much. I couldn't talk to anybody. I couldn't do anything till I could see the film. So, all right. That's how we were feeling going in. Kristen, how did you feel coming out?
excuse me.
Choked on your cheeseburger.
Choked up. That's how you
feel. Yeah, actually. choked up trying to process everything that had just happened because it's a 3-hour movie, but it is a dense 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot that happens. There are different genres that happen in this movie, and I can't even tell you what they are without it being a spoiler. I was extremely happy with the payoff of this whole thing. Very satisfying.
Yeah. Agreed. And just I'll insert this now. What we're going to do in this, if you haven't already figured out, we're talking non-spoilery stuff first. And as soon as we're done with giving you our general reaction to the score, which is the next segment, after that, we're going to go all spoilers from that point on as we talk about our standout tracks. It's impossible to talk about the score and these tracks without being spoilery. So we're just going to dive in after our general score reaction. It'll be spoilers after that. I'll make another announcement.
Before it's we really difficult to section. Talk about this movie without specifics because there's just so much. So we're kind of dancing around things right now.
Yep. Dane, what about you? How did you feel coming out of the film?
Coming out of the film, it was such an emotional film. I mean, in every way that can be said. You know, you laugh, you hurt, you're anxious, you just go through the whole, it was a ride and a half.
Mm-hmm.
The payoff is so great and so worth it. I really think this is not only the crowning achievement of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but a crowning achievement in filmmaking.
Absolutely.
Wholesale. Like, this is what the tentpole blockbuster film is supposed to be like. Mm-hmm. As I was watching it and when it got done, I was like, Hollywood, you really got to get your act together and do this again. Start making these again. Like this is what filmmaking, you know, summer blockbuster filmmaking should be.
Mm.
And we've kind of lost it a lot.
It's well said. I totally agree. I came up feeling like, man, I've seen something special.
Mm-hmm.
That this is one of the greatest achievements in movie making. Not just the film by itself, but what it represents and what it's wrapping up and all of that. And as we get into spoilers, all the connective tissues, all of that, it's just so very satisfying. I came out just with a big freaking grin. I was so satisfied.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like on a production level, on a craft level, on a producers coordinating the schedules of a million A-list celebrity actors level. Like
screenplay, everything. I was just satisfied. And I could even feel myself smiling through most of the film, just like I am enjoying this film beat by beat, just like give me the next thing, I'm ready for it.
Screenplay that talks about nuances of physics that actually check out.
I didn't feel apprehensive in terms of I hope they don't screw this up. I was apprehensive in the way they wanted me to be apprehensive
with
the plot and how things were unfolding, but not like, oh man, this has been so good. I hope they don't screw it up. You know what I mean? Which sometimes I feel like watching certain films. This one, I was just like, I'm on the ride. You guys take me wherever you want to go. I'm 100% bought in. And I felt like, yep, everywhere you took me, I wanted to go. And I enjoyed going wherever you took me. So at the moment, it's the best MCU film.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure with time and successive views, which, you know, I hope to see it one or two more times in the theater, things will come up. Like, well, what about this? About that?
It's not flawless. But, nothing is. But
yeah. But at the moment, it's at the top.
Whoa.
I mean, and watching, I didn't watch Infinity War right before watching this. I've seen Infinity War so many times now, but watching those two back to back is going to be a treat. I mean, that's just going to be 5 hours of
clear out your whole afternoon.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, but what Infinity War was about 2.5 hours long, 220. I forget how long it was.
That's pretty
and
long.
It went by fast. Because it's just, there's just so much going on. And you've got less, I won't even say anything. It's the top of my list. Is it the top of your guys' list at the moment anyway?
At the moment, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Infinity War was at the top of my list last year.
Until yesterday.
That's right. Yeah. Until Saturday morning.
Until Saturday, yeah.
Yeah.
So let's move on to our general score reaction. No spoilers involved here, but just giving you our reaction to the score as a whole. Dane, what was your reaction to Alan Silvestri's score?
I didn't listen to it before viewing the film because the film was kind of almost sacred to me and I didn't want to ruin it by knowing some things, even musically. I just wanted to go into it cold. The score does not disappoint. Silvestri is has fully capped, no pun intended, his magnificent opus, his marvelous opus, I think is a better word.
Used that pun.
Yeah. I mean, it's orchestrated beautifully. It has a warmth, a rawness, and a heart all the way through. Amazing. Great score.
Rawness, that's a word that I find surprising. What do you mean by rawness?
Well, if you listen to it, you know, like so many scores these days, that as the orchestration gets dense, the orchestra kind of gets pushed back from your ears a little bit and you don't hear the nuances. And there's some violin playing and some string playing here. You can hear the scratchiness in it.
Is this like when you can like sort of hear the finger sort of stick to the string?
What I mean by raw is that it's what the orchestra is. It's not glossed over in any way. And it's beautiful. I don't mean that in any wrong way. It's just the humanness of the orchestra is there in its fullness and its goodness. So the recording is very, very, very good.
Okay. Well, if you have a live orchestra, you might as well keep that human element in because that's what you get with it. Okay. What about you, Kristen? What's your reaction to Silvestri's score?
I didn't really want to listen to it beforehand, but we ran an interview with Alan Silvestri. So, and I had to edit it and come up with clips. So I had to do all of that and, came out unscathed as far as spoilers go, but this thing is huge. It's like almost 2 hours of music on the album itself, which is incredible for a movie. Like usually you're looking at an album, we're like, oh, we have almost an hour of music.
And when your film is 3 hours long, you can get 2 hours of music out of it.
Yeah, it was really, really good amount of music. And the way it played for me is, it's like, I mean, I originally said it was like a symphony, but considering the length of it and the bulk of it and the arc that it goes through, it's more like an opera. I mean, it's, and like a Wagnerian opera. For sure. I mean, well, Thanos' theme itself is like straight up Tristan and Isolde, but it's operatic for me. Very excellent peak work.
For sure.
Interesting. I found myself more impacted by the smaller moments, which the first act is really all about, and the character moments. That's the stuff that really stood out to me and I really enjoy, where he pulls on those heartstrings that he's so good at doing. Anytime he goes into that realm, I'm in. I felt like overall the action cues were pretty standard. I mean, it's like, it's Silvestri action music, you know. It sounds like nobody else's action music is Silvestri action.
When I say operatic and Wagnerian, I'm not referring to the action music. I'm referring to the weight of emotion.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In the score.
Yeah, he sets some thematic things up right at the beginning and pays them off really well at the end. The middle is interesting, and we'll get more into that as we talk about our standout tracks, but I think that's where it some of it is engaging and stands out, because stylistically it's so different. It's kind of surprising that, oh, they went there. And then other parts are kind of like, well, if you played that track for me, I might not know if that was from Infinity War or from the first Avengers, because it's Silvestri action music, right? Or from Back to the Future. It's got that vibe, which, you know, it's interesting, you know, listening to it, it's like, man, the man who did Back to the Future in a film that may or may not have something to do with Back to the Future is interesting. May or may not.
Maybe
some people don't believe it.
There's a moment in this that sounds like The Abyss.
I can see that.
Yeah. There's a couple of places.
Someone
where
else on Twitter mentioned Castaway.
Yep. Some of that too.
Castaway.
Yeah. I forget who that was.
Castaway? Yeah.
It was a guy named Wilson. Well, I'm at Wilson the Ball.
I missed that. I'd like to hear where that is.
That conversation somewhere out there.
I won't even say where I think that might be. If it exists, I think I might know where they're talking about. Okay, so we all pretty much had favorable reaction to the score. I also did not listen to it before the film, which is rare for me. I usually don't care. I'm like, well, let me listen to the thing. But, you know, and I got sent the score from Disney or whomever. Yeah, Disney, I think. And I was like, oh, no, I don't even want to read the track titles. I don't want nothing. And I'm usually not that way. I'm usually like, yeah, go ahead. Give it to me. Let me check it out. It's not going to affect me. But this one, like you, Dane, I wanted to preserve the specialness and just have it really. And I think it was worth it for sure. Okay, let's talk about some of our standout tracks. And starting from this point forward, we will be talking spoiler information. So if you haven't seen the film yet...
Why are you listening to this?
That's right.
Yes, please stop at this point.
Fool.
Go watch the film, and then in 3 hours, pop this back on and listen. So we're going to talk about standout tracks, which will get spoilery, but we will have a proper spoiler discussion about plot points and whatnot after that, after we actually close the show, because it's not really going to be music related. It's just going to be our thoughts about the film and the plot and whatnot. So now, though, we're going to be talking about standout tracks. We've listed a whole bunch of them. Some of them I can read. Some of them I can't read, Kristen.
Sorry.
Some we have in common. So I'll pick out the ones we have in common first, and hopefully ones we can talk about for a little while so the piece can play for a little bit. It's hard editing these things. It's like, I like this track, and then I like this track. It's like, how do I edit a piece of that track in 2 seconds? So we'll pick out the ones that we've kind of all listed, or at least two of us have listed. And me and Dane put Totally Fine, which is the first track of the soundtrack. What are your thoughts about that piece?
I think this piece sets up Iron Man's new theme clearly, and it does it in such a way. It's very intimate, and it's very emotional, and very gentle, and very heartfelt. And just even in the theater when it plays, we're going somewhere with this. This film's taking me somewhere, and my heart's going to be fully engaged. And this is not, Iron Man, the rich weapons guy. This is Iron Man, the guy who's lost. He's a new guy.
But it starts with the same music from The Porch, which is from Infinity War, the concluding scene from Infinity War, which plays over Thanos sitting on his porch, chilling.
His retirement music.
Exactly. Which I thought, that's brilliant. The first thing you hear is the last thing, narratively, right. The last thing you hear. And I thought that was great.
Yes.
And it pulls you right back in, reminds you where you were.
It tells you you're at the same exact time period. Mm-hmm. Like Thanos is on his porch, and this is where Iron Man is at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I thought that was great, and I really liked that track as well. I think we all put "I Figured It Out." Let's talk about that one. What are your thoughts about "I Figured It Out"?
That had some really beautiful, like, heartwarming family music in it. That's when Tony's bonding with his daughter as he's like, he's playing with simulations, and she comes in and, says she loves him 3,000 and that whole thing. And it was just so sweet. And that music is just so sweet. And it brings me right back there.
And that's the Silvestri. I mean, I love Silvestri, but that Silvestri, I really love.
There are so many Silvestris in this. Like,
that's true. All the Silvestris are in it, I think. but I particularly love that one because we don't get that very often from him. He doesn't get opportunity to do that very often. I love the first act of this film because it's just not what I expected at all. It is so intimate and character focused. And a lot of people say, slow. Get going already. I was like, I'm languishing in this because once it gets going, it's not going to stop.
When they opened on Clint and his family, I was just like, no.
Yeah. You know what's going to happen.
Oh, no. Yeah.
I just languished in it. I'm like, this is great forever, however long it lasts.
Something amazing came out of it for Tony. And this whole thing is hinging on the possibility of him losing that.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Another one a couple of us have. The How Works. Let's talk about that piece for a little bit. Go ahead.
This is where Silvestri gets to pop into his heist music.
Yeah, he does. And that was totally unexpected. Didn't expect him to go all jazzy, playful, sneaky, heisty, and so I loved it. It was like, I just didn't think tonally we'd get to a place that this would be appropriate, but it's totally appropriate.
Well, he does play a little bit into what Christoph Beck does for Ant-Man. At least with the percussion. Rhythmically, Brian Tyler did something similar in Iron Man 3 when he's breaking into the compound for the Mandarin.
Right.
I love all the heist elements to it. And because it's Scott's plan, it works so well that they do sort of that jazzy, bongo-y heist music.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. Yep, that's really good. Yeah.
Time heist.
Do you have any thoughts about that one? Did you have any thoughts about that one, Dane?
You know, it reminds me of Alan Silvestri's start with Chips. You know, kind of some of the writing in here, it's like, oh, he's going back old school. You know, there's like some electric bass going on in there, and you got, you know, the bongos, and it's very like that 70s heisty, you know, thing going on. There's several tracks that have it, not just the How Works.
Yep.
But the more I heard it, I was like, man, he's going old. You feel like he's tapping into his, you know, his youth a little bit there.
Yeah.
Several times.
Yeah, it pops up throughout the little heists. So many stairs has a part of that too.
It kind of defines the second act, really. I mean,
yeah, it really does.
You didn't get any of that in the third act, but second act, it's all throughout there, which is great.
This is one of the things I really loved about the movie, because we have this heist movie in the middle of a war movie, but it's also like a family movie, but it's,
and a character, you know, character based movie. It's all those things, and how they pull that off is just
phenomenal.
It is, as was Infinity War. Like, how do you tell all of these stories in one and make it work and make it be cohesive? It's just, it's phenomenal. And the Russo brothers deserve just a ton of credit. I mean, just a ton. And they just set the bar so high. It's like so many movies can't tell one story in one movie well. And here they are knitting together 5-6 storylines together in one film and making it work and making it satisfying. Whereas some can't even do one. And it's just amazing to me. One of my favorite pieces by far, might be my favorite. It's close if it's not a favorite. And that is Portals.
Holy smokes, yes.
I love, I mean, obviously it has to do with what happens, and we'll talk about that more further in the spoiler section. But what is happening when Portals happens, it's just fantastic. Solo trumpet builds into this new triumphant theme or something. I'm not sure what it is. That's maybe that, when you talk to Silvestri, he brought it up.
That's that same Iron Man theme that begins in Totally
is it?
Fine. Yeah, it's the exact same. I went back and was listening to it again this evening as we prepared for this, and I was like, where did this come from? Why was it, when it came out, when it happened in the movie, I was like, why does this new theme not feel new? Like, it felt like a...
It felt new to me.
Well, it... I missed that moment it happens, it's like, you're like, this is... It's almost like this expected thing to occur. Like, it doesn't feel... It feels new, but it doesn't feel unexpected. And the reason is because he suggests it in the very beginning when Iron Man's talking into the mask, this is playing. And this is the little riff, which, again, comes out when...
But this is a Cap moment.
This is an everybody moment, right?
The part where it starts is a Cap moment. When he hears someone talking in his ear.
Right.
And maybe I've forgotten what happens after
when
that.
When it swells and you see all the portals open up.
Yeah.
And everybody comes out. You get this big swell of this, you know, I heard one reviewer call it the new Avengers theme. And I was like... It doesn't feel like the new Avengers theme because we hear it again later in another track near the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same melody, and it's the same melody that is laid down very lightly, very gently at the very, very beginning of the film.
Interesting. I missed that. Okay. Well, that's good, because I was like, what is this new theme we're hearing here? I don't know what it is, but I like it. And then, of course, it builds into the Avengers theme that we all know and love, and it's just so satisfying. It's like the moment when Thor and Groot come down in Infinity War. And it's just like, this is why I'm sitting here in this theater. This is the reason why.
How rich was it, and musically too, Avengers Assemble.
Yes.
I was like,
million Assemble. Of you.
It was perfect.
Finally, I mean, someone says that.
Perfect.
Yes. I mean, so well earned over the course of all these films where he's never gotten to say, at least on screen, just like, this is why I got came here today. So satisfying. Let's see. What other ones did you guys put down that we want to talk about?
I just noted that in the middle of Watch Each Other 6, I started getting some Judge Dredd feels. And so that was a...
I have to go back. I can't remember Judge
Dredd. It was a very vintage 90s Silvestri. Oh, I said vintage 90s.
I can't believe you just said that. I'm hanging up now.
I just offended myself. But there's a point in there, maybe around 120-ish, I guess, that felt it for some reason. It made me think Judge Dredd. I didn't go in and compare them because I have barely had any time with this music. But
yeah.
But I just wanted to point that out.
Judge Dredd. I will fire that up because I haven't listened to that in so long.
That's a good score.
The Real Hero.
Oh my gosh.
Let's talk about it because it is freaking heartbreaking.
Oh my gosh. It is as powerful to me as an adult as the throne room scene from Star Wars was as a kid.
Wow. Like throne room from the first Star Wars?
Yeah. Very like that bum ba-dum, ba-dum,
yeah.
I mean, like, I remember as a kid how that made me feel. Well, now I'm a grown up. It still makes me feel that way, but the real hero is real. That's you know what I mean? Like I hate, but it as a grown up, it hit me with the same type of inspirational feeling as that. But with the reality of life.
I think that's because it's a cue that has an arc within itself. So, the cue itself has its own narrative arc.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. And again, it's the payoff from that very first little gentle melody in the first track, right? Mm-hmm. And now it gives birth. And you're left gutted. I mean, I was listening to it before we came on, and I was like, I'm crying again. This sucks.
A plus structuring. I know.
I mean,
I know a lot of composers don't kind of pay attention, just kind of compose and let the music editors put whatever in willy nilly. But this is A plus structure, where themes mean something and they grow into something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, which is why it has so much time. It's why the feels happen, because it builds and builds and builds and builds, and it goes somewhere, and then you're left with that guitar at the end.
Yeah.
And the silence of that moment and the
freaking cheeseburgers.
Oh my gosh.
That's where it almost got me. Cheeseburgers. It pretty much got
with
me.
Jon Favreau, who directed the first one.
Happy Hogan.
I know. Oh my gosh.
That got me. That really got me.
I have to say, I think my kids. I know it's this music in full. The scene itself is so emotional, but the music itself, like, my kids were sobbing their eyes out. And my sons, usually when they sob, they're like, "Oh, I'm a man. I can't do this," and they get angry. But they were like, letting it go. They were like, this is real. Like, I should be crying here. You know what I mean? And I it just was so beautiful in every way, shape, or form. I almost wonder if they let him write that first and then they cut to it.
Interesting. Maybe it works so well. And, you know, I don't know what it would be like to just listen to that piece having not seen the film. I can't put myself in that position, because as soon as I hear it, I'm at that scene again. Yeah. And it's so moving that, I just can't separate the two. So beautiful piece, really beautiful. And then we have, Main on End. What a great conclusionary if that's a word, track.
It kind of felt like an In Memoriam track to me, which
it kind of did. It kind of does.
Which, I mean, was sort of appropriate, especially with the treatment of the credits, where it was...
Yes, the signatures.
Yeah,
the
signatures and the... It felt... Yeah, that... Yeah. Serve like an immemorial to me.
And it has that Star Trek VI. That's the first time I ever saw any end credits with the signatures of the stars. I don't know if that was
right.
We're done, but it to me it said, Star Trek is over. These guys are done, you know, and we're signing off.
Are you foretelling that there's going to be Avengers Generations? Is that what's
I would never
next?
Foretell that, but
oh my god, Thor's
that
gonna
makes
die
a heck of a lot
somewhere.
Of sense. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, at some point, I would not be surprised to see some of the characters who may be gone come back to hand the torch off a little bit more to the next generation. Who knows? But no, I'm not predicting that. But I love the piece. I mean, it's big, it's heroic, it's bold. It's just like, it's like the, not the, well, kind of like the throne room in that, in a sense, but it just felt like after you've just been on this emotional roller coaster, they leave you, they don't bring it to just the action feel. They give you a very honorable
feel. Yeah, they didn't say
feel.
All right, get out of here.
No, this was like...
It was like, stay here and bask
decades
in...
Decades worth of a denouement, yeah. Like...
Yes,
like the end. It was like the end of a play, the end of an opera, the end of a musical, you know? It's like, this is take a bow, guys. And everybody got to stand there and take a bow and bask in the humans that made this remarkable achievement.
And then you're stage dooring all of them and you get their autographs.
That's right. Perfect.
That would be a cool move.
There were people. Now, did you guys see this? There were people in the end credits with signatures that weren't in the film.
There were?
Was Aunt May at the end?
In yeah,
the
porch she was.
In she was there with Spider-Man at the end.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, okay. I did. Sure that was. Scene was so sweeping, and my eyes were so blurred.
Yep. Marissa Tomei was there.
I couldn't make out everybody there.
They pretty much got everybody.
Yeah. What a green screen feat.
They weren't really there, but the effect was satisfying.
Yeah, they were all really there. I would hope that Carol would say hey to Nick Fury.
Not to stand on the stairs.
Got your like, message.
No one gets past my stairs.
Blew a hole in a spaceship.
I thought that worked pretty well. And I'm glad it was a great curtain call. I really love that. Mm-hmm. Someone compared it to the Titanic scene when Rose dies and she goes to the Titanic and it's the curtain call of all the people. It's very similar to that. I thought that was great. I really appreciated them taking the time to do that. Any other specific tracks you guys wanted to bring up?
Oh man.
I thought Not Good. I think Not Good is when ScarJo.
Yep.
And that was so moving.
Same you know, piece from Infinity War, even for you. It's the same.
Is it really?
Exact piece. Yep.
Okay. All right.
When Gamora gets Gamored.
In Plain Sight. Again, that's that heisty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I found refreshing in this film or in this music was just, and you know, we just had Shazam, right? We just talked about Shazam. Well, we have talked about Shazam.
We've talked about it. No one has heard it.
No one has heard us talking about it, but we have talked about it. But this, the value and the joy of just hearing the orchestra and this score. This is orchestra, you know, this is made up of 70 humans under the baton of somebody else. And
70.
You can tell, and it's, well, I don't know how many it is.
Man, this is at least a 90 person orchestra.
It's gotta be. And that's just the horn section. But anyway.
Oh man, those horns. Those
I know,
Silvestri
right?
horns. Have you seen my tweet? My tweet is great.
I saw your tweet.
Did you just say my tweet is great?
It is, though. This is
what
this
did you say?
A good
this
one.
Is like my single most impressioned tweet.
What did it say?
Something like the horns in Endgame are so Sylvester-y that I feel like they're gonna pop out of Instagram and hand me a glass of wine.
Specifically,
interesting.
Just his writing in this, the orchestra, the sound of it, the recording of it. It was refreshing, really refreshing to hear.
Do you find
great artistry
it distinct from? Aside from the Act Two jazzy stuff, do you find it very distinct from Infinity War?
No. I mean, not, how do I say this? I think yes, in the sense that in Infinity War, every time I listen to that score, I always feel like I'm left with a, I feel like it was an action movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what I'm left with.
Yeah.
And so there's a part of me that soundtrack, as good as it is not, I don't find myself listening to it as often. I find myself not really being able to track with it as well. This one, yes, those that action set piece and all of that Sylvester-y action, as we've been talking about, is definitely there. But the heart in this one is set up right from the beginning, whereas the end of Infinity War now, there was a lot of heart in there that I did not see coming, right? Like when everything goes bad, at the end of Infinity War, it's like, oh no. And the music really bites it and takes you with it, right? Like really sucks your heart in there. And I feel like Sylvester started there, as he should have, and paid it off in the end. So it to me, this is a much more satisfying listen emotionally, you know, for what I want from a soundtrack, what I want from an orchestra, what I want to hear and what I will listen to a long time. There's more of that here than in Infinity War. To me.
Okay. Kristen, any final thoughts about the score?
Listen to the score. It's very thematically complete. I feel like more could have been brought in from the past, especially Sylvester's Black Widow music from the first Avengers.
That'd
since she was the only other Avenger to get her own motif in that movie. and especially concerning the focus on her in this one. But this is a very satisfying album. Listen to it. Like, just carve out 2 hours to just like chill and listen to this album.
And listen to it.
Yeah.
Gotcha. It's good advice. It's growing on me more. I've been listening to it quite a bit today. In my opinion of it is rising with successive listens. And we'll see if that continues. But it's definitely rising. I came out originally feeling, it's not the best, certainly not the worst. But like I said, it's rising. My opinion is rising. We'll see how high it can go.
Where would you rank it? In the
right
MCU
now
scores,
that's tough, man. Infinity War is actually pretty high for me. I thought that was an excellent score.
Okay.
At the moment, it's in the upper tier of scores. MCU scores.
So Infinity War got shortlisted last year. Do you think this one will make it past the shortlist?
Maybe. It might. It might. And I think it should. I think this one's a little more diverse than Infinity War.
Very well crafted.
It's doing so much because Endgame has so much more going on in terms of tone. And so the score does too. And so for that reason, and because of the emotional impact at the end that it has, I think that's going to resonate with people and it's going to push it over the top.
I mean, even the pieces that were taken in from like Christoph Beck and Pinar Toprak, those were incorporated in such a way that it's not like they were just tracked in. Like they were,
yes. Yeah. Like, like in Infinity War when the Wakanda for, you know, track played, it was like, oh, they just cut,
they in dropped
it right in there.
They
yeah.
Just dropped it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I felt like elements were spread throughout, just like I had said earlier, yep. You know, the stylistic touches of Chris Opik's Ant-Man score were kind of used throughout mm-hmm. the heist part of the movie. I mean, it was Scott's yep. plan.
Yeah. It was nice to hear those touches, and it just makes me want so much more of that. And it will make things disappointing going forward if they don't do that, or when whatever franchises don't lean into the pre-existing material that way.
Well,
not just needle drop, but actually. But I mean, to pull in actual thematic material and weave it in, not needle drop it, but weave it in right with those themes, I think. And it just,
right with the
themes, it's just so much more
instrumentation
satisfying.
Instrumentation and just yeah. like actually get the spirit of it and translate it into your own music. Mm, nice work.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, the Wakanda drop, you know, obviously Infinity War came out just a couple months after, so probably tough to do. And it was effective in terms of the audience I was around. They lost their mind.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that happened in my theater too.
You know, they're just like, yeah, you know. And I don't know how many picked up on all of the nods and inclusions in this one of previous material. Because it was weaved in so well, you know. I'm sure subconsciously it had an impact, but no one was like going, Captain America 3, you know, or Captain Marvel 3.
I was.
No one in my theater was.
My husband's used to me doing this by now, where I like turn and I like tug on his arm. I'm like, that's the Captain Marvel theme.
I was like, oh, I heard that. Oh, I caught that. But everyone else is just smashing popcorn into their mouth. all right. I think that's going to wrap up the main part of our show. This episode, Avengers Endgame. We're going to talk spoilers here in a minute.
So many spoilers.
Plot-wise and all of that, yes. So if you're into that, stick around after our little credits here, and you'll hear us talking about that. So Dane, where can people find and follow you?
You can find me on Twitter, at Maestro Dane. If you want to know if I have a heart, you can go to SoundCloud, and you can look me up at Maestro Dane or Dane Walker Music. You can check me out on YouTube. You can go to my website, www.danewalkermusic.com. You can put Dane with Walker and Music and find me there.
And Kristen, where can people find and follow you?
The easiest way to find me is on Twitter at KBForNow. That's KBFORNOW. You can find FilmScore Monthly online at FSMOnlineMag.com. Also on Twitter at FSMOnlineMag. Our April issue is out and Alan Silvestri is on the cover.
Nice.
So go read it. We are a subscription site, but it costs less than a fancy drink at Starbucks. I've tested that myself and got very sad. So go check it out.
Get yourself a nice, fine Silvestri wine. Mm.
Yes, yes. We also have an interview with Carter Burwell, my favorite. Go check it out.
For his
Missing Link.
For the Laika movie?
Yeah.
Missing Link.
Oh, nice. That is such a good score, man. That's like, that's already one of my top of the year. Anyway. Mm.
Okay. Very nice. You can find us, of course, at soundcast.com. Or you can send us your email. Let us know what you thought of Avengers Endgame and Alan Silvestri's score at soundcast@tracksounds.com. Or leave us a voicemail on our SpeakPipe widget, which you'll find on the website. If you go to the website, it'll just be right there in your face. Well, off to the right, but off to the right in your face. Or you can hit us up on Twitter at Audio Soundcast. Or you can find and follow me, if you wish, at C. Coleman. Well, that's going to wrap up our Avengers Endgame episode. Thank you so much for listening. And until our next episode, we want to say, may the notes be with you. All right, let's talk about spoilers. So many things.
Oh my god, they killed the Thanos whole film in like the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, that was great.
I know, they didn't just kill Thanos, they decimated
and
Thanos.
And then they were like, I aimed for
the head. I went for the head.
Yeah, exactly.
That was phenomenal. I was like, okay, credit and credits roll.
I've probably not seen the movie and they're going to kill me.
My upstairs
neighbors have probably not seen the movie and they're going to kill me. I'm like shouting right now.
Why are you speaking that loud?
They're down there. They're like, what?
I mean, when it first happened, I didn't think much of it. I was like, oh, okay, he's gone. And then like 5 seconds, I was like, wait, what are they going to do?
Because now? At the whole end point of about Ant-Man and the Wasp, they're like, don't fall into a time tunnel. And I was like, oh, that's how they're going to do it. True. And that's how they did it.
True.
Yeah, but
I just didn't expect him to be dispatched.
I didn't expect him to destroy the stones.
Yeah, that was...
That little flaw, like the whole thing, I was like, they're going to do a time thing. Then they're going to go back. Blah, 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 blah. I kind of had it all worked out. And then he was like, I destroyed the stones. And I was like,
ensured that they were going to time travel somehow in the quantum realm. I mean, as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, okay. But I thought they were going to need him to do something, but no. they didn't need him to do anything, apparently. So great moment.
What was I going to say about the time thing? Oh, I did not expect them to jump forward 5 years either.
No, that was really well done. 5 years.
Year later.
I got spoiled on that. I forget who spoiled me. I think somebody put it in the synopsis that ended up on like the preview text on Twitter for someone's article. I was like,
And the way they did it, you know, was just like so impactful.
Yeah.
Had they just put it up there, it'd have been like 5 years later.
This is a slog. Like, yeah.
Five.
And they show Natasha just like basically like run down trying to run sword and.
Yep.
She hasn't dyed her hair since you see it in the blonde bob. You see the blonde all like grown out and the red coming in. That was a really good costuming, like makeup and hair choice.
Great choice.
Yep. I like Rocket too. He's like all depressed, sour.
Oh, poor.
You know, what are you going to do? Captain Marvel, she's like, what are you going to do? Get another haircut? You know, just kind of like all pissed off.
Poor rabbit.
Captain America's leading Alcoholics Anonymous group.
And Thor has basically become that Thor is a terrible roommate sketch.
That was fantastic.
Young Santa Claus.
The audience was howling.
This is the only one where I didn't get Chris Hemsworth's abs. I got like a keg.
Well, go rewatch one of these.
There was a Twitter feed I was watching on Saturday, or I was reading on Saturday. There was a woman who started it by saying, Is it wrong that I'm more attracted to Thor now than I was before?
Oh,
and everybody started waiting. And there was all these women like, it's so true. It's really happening. And I was like, what? Did it make him human? What? How did this work? You know,
guys, let's be real. Like...
I don't know. It was an interesting thread to read for sure.
My audience was howling when he came on
Absolutely.
Screen. Just howling. It was so good.
Definitely had some the dude feels. Like,
oh yeah. I mean, he called him Lebowski. It was it was perfect.
The guy is calling me names on the video game.
Oh, hang on a second. Goes over there. If you want, I will come to your house with my hammer.
I was so glad to see that Korg lived. Yes. I was so worried about Korg and Valkyrie.
Yep, I'm glad they made it. I mean, there's just so much. I was just delighted by this film. Hulk, Bruce Hulk or whatever he is.
Yeah, I'm a Hulk guy. Like Hulk has always been my guy. I just love Incredible Hulk. And I didn't know what to do with this. I kind of made him a little bit more of a joke. And I've always liked Hulk being the lonely man, you know, the serious.
Well, Professor Hulk is does happen in the comics. So
okay.
Oh, does it?
It was kind of a neat little nod to that.
I figured it was just.
I love it. Just kind of gives him an arc.
Yeah.
It's also kind of funny because there was no Hulk appearance in Infinity War, and now it's like all Hulk all the time.
Well, I kind of wonder
was. He just got his butt beat.
If Ruffalo was like, look, if I'm always, you know, in the Hulk, there's no real acting, you know, there's no real acting range for him. He's not really acting that out. They can animate it however they want, right? They weren't mocapping him, I don't think.
I think they
really
were. I think they
So
not for everything,
but right? But I think they for him to do this, it was
very
like
least they got the lopsided lips completely right, and like all of the.
No, I mean now they're mocapping him, so he is actually.
I think they did in the others
too, because I felt like in this one, it, you know, he was definitely showing his acting chops, like you know he'd want to do as an actor, as opposed to like, okay, I'm Bruce Banner now and I get to do my acting, and then the next thing it's this other, it's the normal Incredible Hulk we're used to. But yeah. No, it kind of made him a little funny, and I kind of didn't like that. I don't know.
I much prefer that over what they did with him in Infinity War. I did not like Bruce Banner in the Hulk Buster suit.
Oh yeah.
I just, the jokes and the writing for that part, I was like,
that was the worst CG in that film too.
It was not good.
The Hulk was traumatized. I mean,
no. Yeah, no. I like the narrative beat. I don't like what they did with Bruce Banner and the script for him in that. But this, I loved. Really loved
it. Good.
And when he was trying to act like the Hulk, but couldn't really, just like pounded that car softly, kind of yelled, that was just hysterical.
Too many stairs.
That was Hulk. That was Hulk. Funny. Take the stairs.
The girl next to me when he busted out of there, like she hit me. She jumped. So, she got so scared she hit me. She's like, "Oh, I'm sorry." I'm like, "Good gravy, lady, get a hold of yourself." Wasn't that scary? But a great scene. I mean, I was surprised to see Robert Redford back. I mean, he's looking pretty bad, but I was surprised.
Old Man with a Gun was supposed to be his last movie. And
well, you know they filmed all of these.
And this one just like slipped right in.
But I think
they said, hey, Robert Redford, we got a check for you for 5 minutes.
But it was touted as like his last on-screen appearance.
Oh, well, a check can change a lot of things like that.
Well, I don't think this was, I think they filmed all of this long time ago. They've been filming these as
they've
gone. A lot of these have been in pieces all along. They've known they were going to do them.
They filmed them back to back.
Yeah. Although, did the Russos know they were going to do that way back in Winter Soldier? I don't think so.
No, they were. I mean, he looks much older than he did in Winter Soldier. And he looked old in Winter Soldier. He looked way old in this.
Poor Sundance.
I gotta say, the hammer and shield moment was just stellar. These are the things I'm thankful for.
I've been waiting for this that scene in Ultron.
I mean, I remember it budging. I just never thought anybody would ever do it. Since this is where my ignorance on the whole on the comics is great.
He actually wields the hammer in Thor 390. So this is like, and there's like a whole what if series of.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And oh, man.
I just love Thor going, so I knew it.
Yes, he gets a Thunder Bro. I'm so happy.
That's one of my all-time moments right there. I mean,
I'm just so glad that
out of my seat.
Yeah, I was just so glad that he was like happy and not like, oh, jealous. You know, someone else can pick up my hammer. He's like, someone else can pick up my hammer.
Yeah. But then when Thor had both of them, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Mjolnir and the axe. I was like, man.
He was fat. All of that combined.
Yeah.
But when he like brought them together, he got like the braided beard and the braids.
Yep. Yeah. I thought he was going to get slim too. I was like, oh, no, they kept his gut.
Magic only goes so far. And his mother was like,
trade moment.
Eat a salad.
The humor, how they worked that in, they just did a brilliant
job. Yeah, with him and his mom, that was just, there were so many story beats that each of the main characters hit that you let you know, like, this is this is coming to a finality for them, right? Like, they're not going to be the main people anymore. Like, right, him reconnecting with his mother, you know, Tony seeing his dad. Then Cap at the end, right? Like, he's even talking about it as he goes, you know, I found the love of my life and And so you have all these things, and you're as I was watching, I was like, oh, they are wrapping this up with a nice, perfect bow.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the whole time travel premise, I didn't, you know, I thought, okay, it's going to involve time travel, but I didn't think they were going to go back to the films in Back to the Future style. I was like, oh, this is just two.
Like, at the see the other parts of the dance happening.
Yes,
half of the movies that I loved it. It was so good.
Yeah, so good.
Like, with composer.
Yes, and bringing in what's your name? What's the Doctor Strange's mentor?
Oh, right.
During the Battle of New York was just. Yeah, Tilda Swinton, that all was just to be able to see the battle from another angle with a whole other plot you didn't even know was going on. Fantastic.
And I loved the behind the scenes aspect of it. Like, you know, after the battle where they have S.H.I.E.L.D. coming in to kind of clean up
walking around.
and then they mirror that elevator fight from Winter Soldier. They mirror that in this.
Yes.
And he gets.
Yes. You're like, oh. He's like,
and they do that in the comics too.
Do they?
Well, there was a whole controversy.
Oh, that was a big thing where he was controversy
where he was supposedly,
but he was just faking it. That's nice. I remember that controversy going around. I was like, "What? Come on!
That was America's ass."
Yeah.
That fight scene, fantastic.
I could go all day. Yeah. I know.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my gosh. And Loki, like, popping into Steve Rogers mode again, just like he did in Thor 2.
Thor, Dark, whatever. Yes. just I didn't think they were getting Natalie Portman back. And even she came back for a second.
Yep.
Maybe 10 of them.
She got a signature at the end, didn't she?
I don't know. I don't remember. I would be surprised for 10 seconds before.
For
the whole series. It was just like Marissa Tomei did nothing in this film, but she had her signature.
She got a signature?
Yeah. Did she?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's all the A-listers that have been in this entire first phase have.
I thought it was just the Avengers. Like the main Avengers.
I thought it was I thought it was just names, and then the
because you saw an image of Marissa Tomei was there. And then Natalie Portman's face was there, and like they had them all there. It was definitely everybody who was A-list got their time in the sun in the end of that.
Okay. No,
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I saw it.
I thought it was just the Avengers themselves, but subsequent viewings shall bear this out.
Of course.
The exchange of give me the big one, you know, the hammers. He wanted this exchange. just awesome.
Scott and teenage Cassie.
Oh my gosh,
I was started crying already.
I know.
I was just like, oh my god, that's right, she's a teenager now. Like,
oh yeah, I was like, well, she was like nine,
right? So you had 5 years to that, and she
looked a lot older than 14.
Yes,
she looked maybe 15 to me.
Yeah, I just like, wait, is she that old? But I mean, the effect was still good. I just thought, wow, she's a lot older than I thought she would be after 5 years. But it
to
was
be
a great,
fair,
great
girls
scene.
Get really tall in their when they're teenagers.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I guess they do.
Speaking as someone who was insanely tall as a teenager.
And my daughter's taller than my wife now, and she's only 13. Mm-hmm. And that's saying something.
Wow.
Yeah. That happened. I hit 5'10 by about 13. So yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I don't think I was 5'10.
Exactly.
Boys don't get that.
We don't.
Boys get an initial growth spurt, then they get a second one in like when they're like juniors in high school.
Right.
Yeah. Man, that's tall. 5'10. That's tall. That's like how tall my sister is. What else?
I really liked in the portals moment, that whole final third act.
My second favorite.
I liked how Doctor Strange and Spider-Man were critical to Tony Stark's ability to do everything, mm-hmm. right? Like Doctor Strange saying to him, if I tell you, it won't happen.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I leaned over to my son because I have to prep him for these things. And I said, Tony Stark is dying. And he was like, what? Because I'd already told him Captain America is going to bite the dust at one point. Because there was at one point I was like, when Thanos was beating down the shield, I was like, get ready. Yeah. This is it right here.
Oh my gosh.
Because I was totally expecting that. I was not expecting what happened to happen. But I just love how Doctor Strange had that. Remember in the end of Infinity War, he just looked at him and he said, I'm sorry, but this is the best way. And I was like, why the hell did he say that? And now in this, when he said to Tony, if I tell you how this ends, it won't happen. I was like,
And
then when he held up his finger with the one,
he's just like,
this is it. And it was like,
this is your time.
Wow. Also the hug between him and Spider-Man, you know, and he's like, oh, okay. Yeah, this is nice. This is really, but it also showed you how much he cared about the kid, right? Because he comes down and he's like, I lost the kid. You know, at the very beginning, I lost the kid. And then he's like hugging the kid. Oh. But you kind of realize that there's
he was like, I'm sorry, sir. And it's just like, oh, my heart completely rended.
He's like, then Dr. Strange is like, it's been 5 years. We have to go back. He needs our help. And then, we're hugging now. Oh, yeah, this is nice. You know? But then when Tony's lying there and he's like, please, Mrs. Stark, please make up. Please wake up. Please. It was just like, I was like, I'm going to cry hard now.
Yeah. Yep.
I got through that part, but when Pepper started talking to him.
Oh, my
just saying, gosh. It's okay. You can go. That was like, okay.
That got That's, me, too, I could because just hear he in said the that theater. To my Nana when she was, you know, slowly passing. I was like, oh, man. everyone will be taken everywhere. Care of. You can rest now, and that is mm-hmm. definitely too real.
Yeah.
Last battle was some Lord of the Rings shit.
Oh my god,
it was.
Oh,
that portals moment, man, was. Whew. When that first one opened, I was like, oh man, here, because just, you know, they established how big the opposing army was, and I'm like, oh man, these guys are toast. And to see an equally sized army come out was just, I mean, it tops Return of the King in terms of scope.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's huge. Oh, such a great moment.
I really, when they started down this road and you knew that they were going to get to this, I literally said to myself, it'll never be as good as you think it. Like, everybody would say this. I was like, oh, it'd be so awesome to see all these people on one screen. And I always thought to myself, we'll never have a technology able to do that as well as you think. And yet, holy cow.
They did it.
Here we
are. It was unreal. I was like, they pulled that off, like, seamlessly. It just, you know, completely believable, completely the scope of it. And I love that they did the camera angle so right that you could see it all without losing any dimension. You know, like you got the full breadth of that sequence. And the music, again, the music, when that happened, my heart, my whole being swelled with that thing. It was just, it was probably one of the finest moments in cinema. And I don't say that just as I love these kinds of films person. I literally mean that. Like, I think that this is amazing.
Well, on a comic book level, it reminded me of like a double page spread in Civil War is actually a really good example in the Civil War comic where you see both sides like in their action poses ready to clash. Mm-hmm. Like it was just, it was artistically a beautiful moment.
It kind of, the color palette and all that reminded me of kind of the end of Ready Player One, the big battle, but that you could actually make out who was who a little bit better in this. And
that's because we have costumes here.
just such a great, I wish it had gone on a little bit longer on the larger scope because they kind of establish it and then they kind of go micro.
Ooh, I did like going micro though, because I, I love a good hot potato in the middle of chaos.
I just wish we could have had a little more of the scope first before they went micro. I'm sure the cost of doing that CG was astronomical.
The micro they needed the micro because they had to bring it back down to the micro level,
of
right?
Course.
So you
I'm
had to
saying,
see
I
Hulk.
There had been
Hulk
more.
Couldn't take him down. Captain America couldn't take him down. Captain Marvel couldn't take him down. You know, everybody's getting.
Yeah.
Everybody's unable. Thor can't do it. Everybody's unable to beat this guy, and it comes down to one guy. And if you know. To get to that,
I'm not saying don't do micro.
So you're saying,
I wish there
had
been more.
You wish you could have been in the theater for 3 hours and 20 minutes if you could have had some more of that scope. I think I agree with you. I could have handled that pan 5 times so that I could go like, oh, yes. Yes. You know, that person's there too. Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Yep.
There was a little bit of Deus Ex Carol there for me, which is, you know, a little hurtful for me, as much as I intensely loved.
But they had to.
I suppose
they couldn't have her there the whole time because she can do anything. She was so she's a little OP.
I think one of the things that I thought was beautiful about this film is all of these characters: Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, Spider-Man. All of them, you've seen fallibility and you've seen that develop. You know, you've seen a little emotional chink in the armor for all of them.
Yeah.
Going back to our Captain Marvel review, I didn't see that for her. And so this movie, she doesn't have that emotional payoff. When she shows up, it's like, cool, but it doesn't have the emotional payoff that you have with all the other ones. Cause you already know they're fallible. They can really screw up. And, you know, she just shows up, flies through the ship and you're like, well, it's over now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad they used her sparingly. They had to, because what were they going
to
do?
She has other planets she has to take care of.
Yeah. It's a little contrived, apparently. But you had to do that. You had to do that because she would have just solved everything for you. She was there the whole time. So I'm glad they did that. And the A-Force moment was pretty amazing. All the women shot.
You didn't like it?
Oh, I'm so glad that you said that because I didn't like it either.
I liked it.
My kids loved it.
You felt it was forced?
I thought it was pandering.
Thank you.
And I really wanted to like it because I love having girl power and I love all of these characters and I love all these women characters. But I felt it was...
I 100% agree with you because I felt
the
same way. I
was watching it and I was like, you know... Two men wrote this movie, two men directed this movie, and this is totally the sort of thing that two guys would be sitting together and being
can
we put this into a movie? Wouldn't that be, you know, won't the fans like not hate us? And then he's like, I don't know, bro.
I mean, yeah,
we had some pretty awful fans.
They took it over. They got pepper pots and you know, an Iron Man suit coming in there, and it was just
that was a little
I
bit
like
that
pepper
come
pots
from.
Coming.
Oh,
in.
Totally. But that just that moment just felt like no.
But
you can't win then. If they don't do a moment like that, people are complaining that, well, women didn't get their moment.
Oh, no, man.
You know what I mean?
I felt like women were getting their moment kind of left and right in this movie, and it was really good. And if they just kind of spread that out a little bit more in the battle instead of concentrating it on one thing, where it was like, oh, yeah, like – all the women characters were at the same part of the battle at the same time.
It's contrived. A little contrived.
I don't know. It was a cool idea.
I thought it was cool for because it lasted what 15 seconds and then it was over.
I know, like, but it was a cool idea, right? And it was. I was like, oh, that's gonna be cool. And then it was like, oh no, you've just pounded that into my brain that this is cool. And my kids. Sons and daughter were like, oh, that was so awesome. I was like, all right, we'll agree to disagree on this.
I have seen the reaction from like other kids and even like teenage and little boys watching the movies and thinking that it's super badass. And that kind of warms my heart a bit.
I have to agree.
For me, I am 38 and jaded and I feel it's contrived.
Well, I'm 50 and jaded, and it was contrived, but I didn't expect anything like that to happen, and that they gave it, you know, a few seconds, because at first I thought, oh, okay, it's going to be like two or three, and then they just keep coming in. I'm like, oh, wow, you're bringing.
I think that's what I'm saying.
All right.
I think if it had been two or three, I'd have been like, oh yeah, but then they were like, no, all of the woman superheroes are here now, and they yeah, are going to personally escort this poor woman. And I was like,
like one of those things that piss me off in movies where they have like the lady bad guy versus the lady hero, because you can't have the guy hero punching the lady bad guy. It reminds me of that, and that has always pissed me off as far as movie tropes. But
yeah, well, she went head to head literally with Thanos, yep, and absorbed that headbutt pretty doggone well.
That was pretty badass, I will say.
I mean, so when I take all of it, and you said yourself, you know, women got their moments all throughout the film. If it had only been that, then I would agree with you. But since I think they got their moments, and then they got this big heroic group moment, I thought maybe they could have executed a little bit better into how they got everybody there, but
maybe I'm just bitter that Nat couldn't be part of it. I don't know.
That's true. That is true. That is very true.
Are we never going to get a Black Widow movie now?
No, they have one. It's in production right now.
Okay.
I don't know how they do it. It's a prequel, I guess.
An origin story.
Yeah, I think they're going to do a standalone. This is the Black Widow movie.
Maybe they can do her 5 years.
I think the key event that happened in the movie that kind of set you up for it is when he says, daughter of Ivan or whatever. Yeah. She's like, I never knew my father's name. That. I'm like, that's selling that. Yeah. That's leading up to something.
Ivan's going to be in the movie.
I could have sworn that I saw a pair of toe shoes on one of the chairs in her office too. And that kind of speaks back to her.
Oh, ballerina.
Yeah,
tissues.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. And that goes back to her origins.
The quadra flippity flu. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. No, I'm going to stop you from dying. Man, I was like, come on. What have you died already?
I know. And
that
then
was so gut.
It was. And then when she did what she did, I looked over and my 10-year-old son was shaking. He was crying so hard. I mean, he was like, because he was like, Dad, that's so awful. One of them had to do it.
Oh,
why couldn't it have been Hawkeye? I was like, are you serious? Like, I was so shocked to hear that come out of his mouth.
I thought it was going to be Hawkeye.
I did too. So, which is weird too, because we actually, a good friend of ours is Jeremy Renner's first cousin. So we kind of, Hawkeye kind of has a little bit of, you know, personal status in our house. And it was like, he was still like, oh, why didn't it have to be? I was just like, dude. I mean, he was really broken up over it. And I was like, man.
Wow. Honestly, I thought they were going to gank Red Skull and brag to Steve about it. I mean,
gank him? What do you mean, gank him?
Like, they were going to off him.
Push him over the edge.
Make him the one? But it had to be a love sacrifice.
I play too much D&D, so I'm like, push that guy over the edge. Go tell Captain America, hey, guess who you couldn't kill? We just killed him.
He would have just floated and be like, no, you can't do that. That won't work.
I'll be the voice of Optimus Prime.
That was well executed. It just went on so much longer. I thought two, maybe three switches, but the fourth one's like, what? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that was, I really think that might have been the most brutal moment in the movie. It was just the emotionally, well, I don't know. This film had so many emotional payoffs.
Yeah, it did. I was sad, very sad to see her go, because she's one of my favorites. And it's just like, oh.
Just like Budapest.
Yeah, they had their last little laugh. But why send them to, if what's her face? What's her name? Nebula knew, why would she send those two together there, knowing that what would have to happen? Knowing that her dad and sister went there and only one came back.
Because maybe she knew that these two have a connection and they actually have like a very deep friendship, and it's the only way they'll get it.
That's a good point.
So if two, two other people went that didn't have that connection?
I mean, would they?
It wouldn't have worked, I guess.
Shove Red Skull off the cliff.
He's unshovable. It comes with the job description. Job security. No one can kill you. All right. Anything else? There's so much in this movie.
Tony Stark has a heart.
Tony Stark has a heart.
Oh yeah, that's right. That was.
What did he say? Now, here's the weird thing. I've been having random little. Anyway, I literally cannot remember what he said at the beginning of that speech that they're watching in the cabin. He says something about everybody wants a happy ending. And then what does he say?
I can't tell you.
You can't remember either?
I can't tell you. No.
It's the one where it ends with him saying, I love you 3000 and then turning it off.
Yeah.
Yep. But I was like, he says something really important about the hero's journey. He's like, the part that I remember, he's like, da 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 da, happy ending, da da da. But the end is part of the hero's journey too. Can't remember. You were crying too hard?
I have no idea. Yeah, I was just...
I was a wreck.
trying to absorb stuff. I was just denouement.
I was a wreck.
Yeah. I like that they gave Cap a happy ending, though. Like, a legitimate happy ending. Like, he goes and, you know, gets his dance with his best girl. Like,
yeah. I thought him seeing her was going to be it. Like, his last little... Yeah. When he saw her through the glass, was like, oh, man, that's all... So I like that they did that too.
Do you know the song they're dancing to was written by Richard Sherman?
Really?
Was it?
I saw that in the end credits. I was like, that guy gets around.
Yeah, well, it was a very well done.
The makeup conclusion that they did on Chris Evans.
Yeah.
Like, what makeup, CG, great. Whatever, that was great. He looked like old Chris Evans.
A combination of both. Like, yeah.
I think there was a CG effect in this film that didn't sell itself. You see, Andy?
There was one.
Which was?
There was one. When Hulk, which is a great scene, when Hulk walked out to give Ant-Man his tacos, it's just a great scene. His feet on the ground were just not quite there.
Okay.
It was like, ooh, that doesn't look good. But literally, that's the only time it stood out.
I was just looking at the scene, though.
It was hilarious.
I was like, oh, Scott, his tacos are gone.
And Hulk comes out and gives it to him. I mean, the way they interspersed humor into this tonally all over the place film was great. I mean, they have some magic in their writing. They just know how to do it.
Left with that feeling of this will never happen again.
It might not.
I mean, I literally was left with, we'll never have this again. Like, never again.
People will try.
Eventually they'll succeed, but we'll never.
But 22 films?
My buddy
Tim, in a 10-year span?
My buddy Tim Rodier from Omni Music Publishing, he's like, dude, I did the math and it's 47 point something hours.
Yeah.
I'm like,
because they did marathons.
It's like a 6-day work
week. Marathons leading up to. It's like 2 days straight. You're going to watch movies for 2 days straight and then watch Endgame?
Nope.
No way.
No, thank you.
No way.
I can't even bring myself to marathon Lord of the Rings.
I can do it over a few days, but I can't do it in one
per way. Day.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, it may never happen again.
I'm assuming Cap returned all the stones to the right place at the right time, and he returned Mjolnir also.
I hope so, because otherwise Thor in that time when I was like, where's me? Where's my hammer?
Where's the hammer?
He's sitting there with his hand out like, where is Mjolnir?
But there is that one Loki that escaped with the Tesseract.
Yes. Television show.
I was like, oh, there's the Disney Plus series. So
they set up up Loki, they set up Bucky and Falcon, the new Captain America. That's the next series. They're gonna have a TV series in that.
Yep. How are they gonna do WandaVision?
don't know.
I have no idea.
I mean, they have Wanda, but Vision is still...
He's still gone.
He's still parts.
Oh, I did have a question. When Howard Stark says, Jarvis, have we ever seen that guy before?
Yes, he was, He was in Peggy Carter.
But yeah. That was from the TV series?
Yeah. That's,
okay, yeah. It wasn't... They didn't smartly put... who plays Vision, who was Jarvis.
Bettany.
Yeah, they didn't pull Paul Bettany there as Jarvis. I thought that would have been a cool little...
No. That's the guy who plays Jarvis on the Agent Carter TV show.
Okay.
Yeah. That was a great nod. I was like, that was a good nod.
That was the only television character who made it over, aside from...
Yeah, Coulson wasn't in this.
Coulson wasn't in this? That was so weird.
Hmm.
I guess he's... Wasn't he? He's dead, right?
He came back in
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. Okay. I stopped watching after at three,
although, so I mean, who knows what happened in that 5 years?
True. Now, that's one thing. Timeline-wise, I kind of got... Because what happened to Gamora? Where did it happen to her? We don't know what happened to Gamora.
I don't know if she got snapped with the rest of the...
Wait a minute.
They showed him searching for her.
The old new Gamora. The present is
they never show anything.
She's not on the ship in the end thing where you see.
Yeah, they show him searching. They had a little search window up, searching Gamora. You know. But I was like, okay.
First time you missed, but the second time you got both balls. She's like, this one? It was either him or a tree.
Yeah. And then that was the last you saw of her. I was like, oh, did she dust?
Yeah, I was wondering that as well. There was something else I was thinking of that. So when Peter Parker is in the end and you sort of see him in the hallways of a high school and... His friend is there too. I mean, it's 5 years later. Did his friend get dusted too? Is that why they're both still in high school? Because
I guess that
did not look like a college hall.
No. And the next movie is him in high school. So I'm like, okay. But
how do you re-register for a high school after being dusted for 5 years?
But that's where I got lost in the time, I guess. The time frame. I guess. So are we back to current time by the end? And so all the people who were gone for 5 years are just back.
They're back.
But they haven't aged.
They erased the first movie the moment they all come back. So the moment they all come back.
Oh, okay. So he snapped.
He hadn't snapped because Thanos now arrives.
Hulk did snap.
Right.
And he brought everyone back.
And that's when he said,
But when did that happen? When did he snap?
But that right when he snapped is then when Thanos showed up.
But that's a past Thanos.
Yeah. Correct. That's the past Thanos. So when Hulk snapped in real time, right?
Calling physics majors.
They've already come out. They've already come back to current time after they did their deal. They put the thing together. He snaps. Yep. So that's current time. So everyone is back at that moment.
Right.
Okay. So everyone's current time. They've just been gone for five years.
Everyone's now back. In, say, 2024.
Right.
Oh, I see.
5 years from now.
Gotcha. Okay. That is weird. Why would you go back to high school? Or why would everyone go back? Did everyone get dissolved from the high school?
I guess then everyone came back. I guess if 50% of the class of 2018 just suddenly disappeared, they would have to re-enroll at the same spot.
because it makes sense that they've set up home. What's it called? Spider-Man.
Far From Home.
Homeward Bound.
Far From Home.
I read an interview and they said that Kevin Feige said that they always do after an Avengers movie. There's always that movie that comes after that kind of ushers you into the next phase. Mm-hmm. And they said that.
So it can't be a prequel.
Right.
Then,
right? He said, we chose Spider-Man to be the person to take
it would
deal.
Be a baby.
his wording was to help you deal with the emotions of Endgame. So they thought Spider-Man was the best character to take you forward
So Far From Home. I'm wondering if it's
he's so cute.
I wonder if he's going to be having like I miss my daddy kind of
I want to bake him cookies.
Oh my goodness.
I'm sure he's going to have daddy issues. I'm certain he will.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was fun. I'm sure there's a thousand things to bring up.
But, I'm just glad I can talk to some other people about that.
I know,
that.
Right? I was dying all weekend. Me and the kids.
I mean, it's actually...